Soul Sister Radio.
From underneath the trees, we watch the sky, confusing stars.
Welcome to Soul Sister Radio, and this is Heart for the Community with Doreen Wong. Take it away.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Happy July 25th. We are actually going to be talking about caring for a child with special needs, and we have two founders and executive directors of nonprofits on the line with us. First, we have Anna Trujillo, who is the executive director of Fuerza. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you, Doreen. Good morning. Welcome.
And we also have Alex Vasquez, who's the founder of Hope for Remy. Hi, Alex. How are you?
Good, Doreen. How are you doing?
I'm good. I have to be honest with the listeners. I know both of our guests today, so I'm really excited. I've only talked to Alex through social media, so for people who are a little on the fence about social media and whether it actually works for networking, it totally does. So Alex, why don't you talk a little bit about yourself and Hope for Remy?
Well, just to give a little bit of background on myself, I work in quality assurance for internet startups, and my son's name is Remy. He was born with a congenital heart defect called congenital junctional ectopic tachycardia. And what that is he had actually extra AV nodes in his heart when he was born. So when his heart was sending the signals from the AV node to the bottom chambers to pump his heart, or the bottom two chambers, it was actually sending 4 or 5 signals. So his heart rate was racing up into the 200s beats per minute. And from there, it was a long process of getting him expedited to Children's Hospital in downtown Dallas from where we were at in Frisco. It was just a really major ordeal that happened in a heartbeat that caused us to really start up the Hope for Remy website and really try to give awareness to his condition, only because it's so rare. I believe the doctors are telling us over the last 10 years, only about 40 to 45 kids have had this type of congenital heart defect. Wow. So it was very hard to find documentation, even case studies online. So I just wanted to build a community where people could come and talk and get more information and just really to help support each other.
Wow, that's great. And you do a lot with Children's Hospital. I mean, I've seen some of your Facebook posts and some of your tweets, and there seems to be a strong partnership there.
There is. With Children's Hospital, I wouldn't wish anything on anybody's child, but mm-hmm. if, God forbid, something happens, I've worked with Children's Hospital since the birth of my son, and they have been extremely helpful with information, helping us with, of course, payments and getting in touch with the right doctors for my son's condition. Even if it's outside of their network, they go above and beyond to assist with that. So anything we can do to help support Children's Hospital, whether it be running in a 5K or raising money for them or just volunteering time at the hospital, me and my wife try to do it as much as possible.
And Anna, why don't you talk a little bit about yourself and Forza and what Forza stands for. I am saying that correctly, right?
That is correct. There is. First of all, thank you again for having me on your show. Good morning, Alex. Nice to meet you over the radio.
Nice to meet you as well.
Thanks. I've had the honor to serve as executive director for Forza for almost 10 years now. Fuerza is actually with an acronym, and it's also a word in Spanish. In Spanish, the word meaning is strength. But the acronym stands for, and I'll translate it as best I can in English, is Families United in Response to Down Syndrome and Other Alterations. Fuerza started almost 26 years ago as a small support group for parents who had children with Down syndrome, Spanish-speaking parents. Soon after that, you know, it expanded, and now we cover all disabilities. So the mission of Fuerza is basically to serve as a source of support, information, and guidance to Spanish-speaking families who have a developmentally disabled member, and also to unify the families with special events and parent-to-parent support activities. We focus on training and education. In the Latino community, unfortunately, due to our social, cultural and socioeconomic situation and the language barriers, a lot of times our families are underserved. So Fuerza kind of fills that gap with referrals and just bringing to the forefront information to families on the specific diagnoses of the child's disability, whether it be autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy. We do the research for them. Because one thing is to have to deal with the knowing that your child has a disability, but then not being able to find something in your own language, it's quite difficult. So that's what we do. We're a 100% volunteer-based organization, and our current membership is about 600 families.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that with us. You mentioned something about there being barriers, and the one that you specifically mentioned was language. How does those types of barriers impact families who are already dealing with and struggling with having a child with a disability of some kind, and then having to deal with now a language barrier?
Well, in many ways, primarily you can't, let's say you're even communicating with your doctor, if you're, the terminology is challenging as it is. If you don't understand the information that's been given to you or the information that's been given to you in English, you can try to translate it, but sometimes you get lost in the translation. So, you know, what we do is try to find the kind of simple translation that is easy to understand. Of course, if we have a presentation, we make sure that the speaker is bilingual. We try not to use a translator because, again, the content, there's a loss of content when you have a translator. But when a parent doesn't communicate well in English, the questions don't get asked either to the school personnel or to even into the doctors. So there is a gap that exists, and it is a barrier. So a lot of times parents go without asking. They'll go without knowing that there is help, that there is some type of therapy or treatment or services available because they don't know how to ask. They don't know that they can ask also. Mm-hmm. So it is a cultural, also a cultural barrier sometimes. Not all the time, but it is especially with the older generation parents.
Mm-hmm. Because I know, you know, within the Asian community, you know, having worked for nonprofits that deal specifically with individuals with developmental disabilities, you know, it takes a lot for that community or my community to, one, reach out for assistance. You know, there's still a lot of stigma associated with disability. And so then once they do reach out, you know, they're still very protective and they're still hesitant sometimes to push the envelope or to, you know, ask those questions or to even disagree and say, no, my child deserves better or my child deserves more. Alex, is that something similar that happens that you're seeing with the families that you work with or in Texas?
Yeah, that's another thing that we see here in Texas, just in our interactions and our volunteer work at Children's Hospital. Me being bilingual, they always call me over to do a lot of translations, and it's true, there's a lot of disconnect even in the translations, and I've seen it firsthand with parents, fathers and mothers talking amongst themselves about, should we ask this question to the doctor? And if I'm there trying to help them translate, I'll ask them and try to be that voice for them, because at times they'll just keep it within themselves because they feel that disconnect. They feel that they can't voice their concerns appropriately to the doctors. So a lot of times it does go unasked, and even if they have questions about further treatment, they would just continue to go unasked.
Mm-hmm. And I have so many questions running through my head. Like, I'm trying to narrow down, like, which one I should. So the language barrier is one major challenge. Are there other challenges that you both have seen, either your personal experience or through the, you know, volunteer work that you do?
I'll go ahead and speak first. Well, I've seen in my personal experience, because my nephew is Down syndrome. So that really was the only exposure that I had to a person with disabilities was Down syndrome. Now, Michael's already 24. When we were first told of his diagnosis, we really didn't know what Down syndrome was. We didn't know it was a disability. We thought it's an illness. Well, okay, so how do we cure it? So it was kind of a shock. My sister was in her early 20s, and it was totally unexpected that you'd have a child with Down syndrome at that age. In any event, we kind of rallied together and trying to find out what Down syndrome is, what do you do, and we were stuck in that situation. Well, everything was in English. My sister was now can understand English, but at that point she wasn't really comfortable. And, you know, she found Fuerza. It was through somebody at the hospital, I think, one of the nurses referred that, hey, there's a small support group here for you. And so, you know, we kind of rallied around that. But we also saw that the family members are equally impacted, the grandparents, the siblings. So, you know, there's so much focus on the disabled child, but sometimes the other siblings kind of get lost in the, you know, in the process. And when you are focusing all of your attention on one family member, you have to always remember that you have the other children. So we, of course, have kind of redesigned our program to include the entire family. We'll host special events where all siblings can come and participate. It's not just that one member. We take care of the whole family. So does that kind of answer a little bit?
It does, you know, and I like that Fuerza is taking a holistic approach to services, because you're right. You know, when you have a disability in the family, it really does impact the family beyond, you know, just that child or, you know, an adult child. You know, it impacts the immediate family and the extended family. As well, and especially when there's a sibling. I remember going to a conference on autism, and they had a whole panel or track on for siblings. And they had kids of different ages kind of talking about and being there for each other about what it's like for them to have a, you know, sibling with autism and the demands that it puts on them, but also the rewards that it gives them as well. Alex, Remy has an older brother, correct?
Correct.
Do you notice that as well? You know, how do you make sure that, you know, the siblings feel equally as important?
Well, I think it was very hard on him and us at first, only because Remy was hospitalized for the first about 45 days of his life. He was constantly in the hospital. So being that we're in Texas and we're the all we have is each other, all of our family is back in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
At times our older son, Logan, was feeling somewhat left out, only because we would drop him off at daycare in the mornings and spend the whole day at the hospital. And me and my wife would switch off on spending the night at the hospital, and then the other would come home, pick up Logan, and spend the day with him. But he would feel that disconnect, not having both parents there. And for the first month or so when Remy was released from the hospital, since we were so involved with his care, his feeding, because he was still on a feeding tube and taking 7 different heart medications, we were so involved with taking care of Remy that for a while we almost set Logan aside, since he was, in our eyes, he's fine. He's okay. He doesn't need all the attention. And then we started seeing the sadness in his eyes when he would come to us and wanting to go from sleeping in his own bed to sleeping in our bed just so he could feel that closeness. And after talking with a social worker at the Children's Hospital, they gave us that reminder that just because you have Remy home now and there's a lot of medication and a lot of doctor's visits, you cannot neglect Logan. So it took us some time to integrate Logan into the care for Remy because he really did want to care for his little brother. Mm-hmm. We made him fully aware and spoke to him about Remy's condition, what he had, and really involved him in the day-to-day routine with him. So he was more involved, and we brought him back into the whole as a family. And as Fuerza does, with their reinforcement of bringing in the family and helping them all realize that it's not only the parents or the child, it really affects all the family, including siblings and cousins and aunts and uncles. So that allowed us to bring everybody back in. And with that, that's when we started really putting more emphasis on the website and on the Facebook pages, just so we could stay in contact with our additional family, with our immediate family in Los Angeles. And also we started getting more and more inquiries from other people that have run into this issue, or their child is now 25, 30, and they were born with this issue. So it allowed us to build that community and grow everybody in.
And, you know, I would think that building that community is so important because there are different families at different stages of the child's life. So it's good to kind of have that support. Like, you know, these are the things
right.
that, you know, we sort of saw at this phase in, you know, our child's life. And, you know, you may want to look out for these types of things.
Right. And that's one thing that in some of our more troubling times, the first couple of months, and we had the website and the Facebook up, I got a message from a user. Her name is Patricia, and she really gave me a boost in my morale and in the whole family's morale, because her son was that 25-year-old that was born with the condition, and now he's 25. He's married. He's his own. He has a stable job. He's a stable life, and that's one thing that concerned us when we first brought Remy home was, is he going to be normal? Is he going to be able to play with the kids? Is he going to be able to go outside? There was so many questions, and building that community, talking to somebody that actually went through what we were going through helped us out so much, and we want to continue to spread that, hence the website and everything.
You know, and it's definitely important to have, you know, and to be able to see. Is that the same kind of examples or support that you see within Fuerza, Anna, where parents of younger kids sort of look to the parents who have older adult children for that kind of inspiration or support or encouragement?
You know, typically in our Latino community, we kind of have raised that the older child takes care of the younger child. It's just kind of the way things happen. But what we've seen with Fuerza is that regardless of the age, the entire family unit rallies around the child that has the special needs. And so it's like they put themselves second or third, and it's all about that child, which is great. But then we also reinforce that, you know what, you have needs yourself. You know, your high schooler right now needs to focus on college and et cetera. So we constantly remind parents, it's great that, you know, your 16-year-old is really helping you out with your 5-year-old child with Down syndrome, but don't forget that, you know, they've got prom to think about. You know, they have other personal events that they need to focus on, and that's not make it all about the special needs child. We also want them and help them, and we actually learn from them, is that we don't focus so much on the disability, but what abilities that the special needs person has, and focus on that so that they have the chance to, you know, reach their full potential. Going back to my nephew with Down syndrome, speech is a big problem for him, but he can download and he can burn CDs and he can be a DJ, excellent photographer, okay? YouTube would not know if you saw his work that he can't speak or write. I mean, he can write very, you know, limited. However, you know, let's focus on what he can do, and mm-hmm. and it's just explore that. But, you know, it's something, it's beautiful. I mean, since joining Fuerza, I've developed such an appreciation for the love and the dedication that countless parents and family members have that care for children with special needs. I mean, I have three kids of my own, and that can be challenging. But, you know, when you're raising someone with a special needs, it's 10 times that. And I can just, you know, I have nothing but admiration for parents who dedicate and the time and the effort and just love their children unconditionally. To me, it's a blessing. I mean, first, I see it more of a ministry more than anything, and it's just so rewarding to be able to be there for parents, let them know they're not alone. The disability community is larger than you think, and you know, if we can help in any small way, it is a huge reward for us.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and you know, I'm not a parent. I'm only an aunt. So, you know, but I can see, like, in my nephew, and I appreciate, you know, all the small little miracles that happen. And when I used to work for Asian Rehabilitation Service in Los Angeles, I remember, you know, we served, you know, over 80 adults with varying degrees of disabilities, mostly developmental. And I remember coming in to work when I was, you know, going through my chemotherapy, and, you know, people would say, why don't you just stay home? Like, why don't you just rest? And it was because when I walked into that building, you know, you just felt love and hope and happiness from, you know, all of the individuals. And, you know, they did the most amazing things as far as, you know, being who they were and happy with who they were in the sense that, you know, it's like, of course they had their bad days, but, you know, they found joy in mm-hmm. things that I think that sometimes we take for granted. And, you know, seeing them laugh and smile, or, you know, when I would go out onto the floor and try to help them with, you know, packaging and stuff, they would actually, you know, very politely tell me, mm-hmm. oh, Miss Doreen, maybe you should go to the other side of the table and just count what we put together. And at first I was like, oh, why? And they said, because you're slowing us down. and so, you know, it was, to me, it didn't matter, like, you know, the grants we got or the, you know, whatever stresses, you know, I was dealing with running the organization. The reward truly came from just being able to talk with them and interact with them and see their development. 'Cause it seemed like each day they developed or grew or did something, or I don't know, I can't even describe it and express it accurately, but it was just such a joy, you know, to be part of that environment. So you had mentioned, you know, that, you know, the older children take care of the younger children. And a few weeks ago, we actually had a guest on the show who was the founder of the American Association of Caregiving Youth, and she pretty much talked about that same thing, that, you know, it's important to let kids still be kids, because mm-hmm. they want to help and they want to participate in they give of themselves, and they don't really, you know, they don't get to just be the kids, you know, let their hair down and be wild and crazy. So I think it's great that, you know, you kind of address that as well on Forza.
Thank
so,
you. Go ahead. No, it's just an important aspect of what, not just what we do, but it is the structure of the family unit, kind of. And it, I guess it has been that way for so long, at least in our community, that we kind of look at it and say, you know, just because it's been this way forever, it doesn't mean it has to continue to be this way. And so, you know, let's focus on everybody, not just one member. And, you know, you try not to put all the pressure on some other siblings, and then not allow them to fulfill their full potential.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, you know, it's something that we're constantly working with and trying to find ways. We've had in the past kind of like a father-to-father subgroup, also one just for siblings. But we are struggling to get there, to reach out to the families and say, you know, let's talk about your family member that doesn't have a disability. How are they doing? You know, what are their concerns? And so that's something that we want to get to soon, and have maybe just a different program designed just for them.
Great. And when, you know, I guess for our listeners, you know, if they are going through, you know, kind of a new diagnosis, like what suggestions or words of encouragement might you give them? Maybe I'll start with you, Alex.
Well, I would have to say, you know, going through what we did, the first thing you have to do is get all the facts first. I know it's very easy to react to the first thing out of the doctor's mouth, and whether it be a cancer diagnosis, a JET diagnosis, or anything along those lines, it's always best to get all the information, get in good with the doctor, ask all your questions, use the internet as much as possible. That's what one thing that we did. And just be informed of what's out there, what treatment's out there, and ask questions. Ask for the second opinions. Is there anything, you know, further that can be done to alleviate any issues, or to just get other opinions out there? That's one thing I would do. And also the family support and friend support. I can't stress how much that has helped us living so far away from our family. Our friend support, the support of the doctors and the social services team at Children's, it's just good to have that support system. So those will be my main points.
Mm-hmm. Anna?
I agree with everything that Alex has said. Is when, depending on the disability, for instance, autism, that doesn't get diagnosed until maybe the age of 3, you know, or later. But for Down syndrome, parents sometimes know before the child is born, or they know at the moment of birth. The information from the doctor can be very shocking to the parents. We have a program where we've sent our communication to local hospitals in the LA area. So a lot of times we get calls from hospitals and a family's just had a baby with Down syndrome, you know, and we've told them about you, so would you be willing to connect with them? And we have that, and that's a wonderful thing that they're able to kind of expose them to us. And basically to let them know you're not alone, you know, and it's not the end of the world. It's just, it's some, you know, you were going on a vacation and you had this all planned out, so now it's going to, you know, take a little different path. But, you know, you're not alone. So get them educated as quickly as possible. Just like Alex said, get them the information about that specific disability in terms of that are easily understood, not mm-hmm. just all these medical terminology that, you know, is you can't understand. We have a booklet that we put together ourselves in the area of Down syndrome, basically what it is, you know, how did it happen, what happens next. We did the same thing for autism. You know, there's soft covers, pamphlets, but they're useful because, you know, you're dealing with a diagnosis, you know, and then now what? Not a lot of people have access to the internet, or it's a concept that's not, you know, they don't embrace it. So the face-to-face communication really works, and if not, we have a toll-free number. They call, they speak to a parent. They're not just speaking to a representative of FORESTA. The parents that work with FORESTA are all parents of a disabled child, so they're getting to speak to somebody who's got firsthand experience in that area. And some of our board members, we have two that are parents of children with autism, and we have three that are parents of children with Down syndrome. So, you know, if we can get to the families early, then it's a good, kind of like early intervention form of program that we can start working with him.
Now, do you do any advocacy as far as helping parents once their child gets into a school with their IEP, or, you know, how do you help parents advocate for additional services? Anna, do you want to go first?
Sure. Well, you know, here in I'm not sure how it is in Texas, but here in California, you know, we have the regional centers. And first of all, we make sure that the parent knows about a regional center, and we kind of get them set up with that, you know, enroll your child in a regional center, and they get the evaluations done, et cetera. We don't provide advocacy service per se, but we do have a referral. We will refer them to, you know, somebody or an agency or, you know, attorneys that work for free, for instance. But we also have training for the parents, basic tips and techniques. You know, they're educated on the IEP process, what questions to ask, how to appeal, you know, if a service is denied.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, if a service is denied to a parent, they'll just say, okay, well, all right, so I'm not going to get this. That's not always the case. You have a right to say, wait a minute, I'm going to appeal this. I feel that my child is entitled to this service. And, you know, it's training. Like I said, we in FORESTA, we will not come and sit in at an IEP with a parent. We don't do that, but we are a referral. We're an information source for them. So that is the extent of our advocacy. I mean, we'd like to be able to do more, but we don't have the capacity, and we don't,
mm-hmm.
because we're all volunteers,
mm-hmm.
we can't take time off of our, you know, job, for instance, and go and accompany a parent when they're meeting with their the teachers for their child's IEP. So we do have information for them.
Okay. Alex, do you have something similar to a regional center, which is kind of a state-funded assistance program in Texas?
Well, for REMI, one thing that we did was we contacted Early Childhood Interventions, and they actually work with kids that are sometimes premature born, so they're a couple of months behind.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, through working with them, you can get grants from the state that will actually cover for your child, and they would help your child with coming up to speed, catching up to kids that are their normal, their age, and they're also able to diagnose and refer you to a company, a state-funded preschool here in Texas,
mm-hmm.
where you're able to get into preschool, and the state pays for it, and they're able to continue that childhood development for your child, so they catch up to kids of their own ages.
Okay, great. So kind of the same, but in the sense that there's still at least, you know, some state assistance that can help.
Right. I would recommend looking at your county, your city, and your state, because every county is different here in Texas, and sometimes there's state assistant programs that will cover you as well. Even though it's not offered through the county, the state will offer those assistant programs.
Great. Now, is there any discussion that you know of as far as, you know, budget cuts and how that's going to impact services? Alex, do you want to go first?
Budget cuts as far as
you know,
Medicare, Medicaid,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm. And how that might impact you know, the services available to the children.
Well, one thing that we went through is once Remy was diagnosed with his condition, about 3 months after, I was actually let go of my or the company that I was working with sold. So I was in the process of looking for additional Medicare or insurance coverage. But due to my son's pre-existing condition, I had to stay on COBRA only because his pre-existing condition wouldn't allow an insurance company to cover him. So one thing that Children's Hospital does is they offer incentive programs as far as discounts of on your medical bills, and they work directly with your insurance, whether it be Medicaid, Medi-Cal, your insurance, to work with getting you the services. However, I know Children's Hospital is privately funded, so I'm not sure how that would impact, say, at a general hospital that is state-funded.
Okay. Anna, how about in California?
Well, we've seen, and I think you may be familiar with this, during with the budget cuts and the reduction in services for some of our families, it varies from regional center to regional center. So you'll see some of the families that belong to a specific regional center may have not seen an impact or a reduction in any of the services that their children get, while the families in the regional center that's only 10 miles away may have been dropped from certain programs. Again, it varies, but we have seen some, especially in some of the programs that the state or the regional center kind of determined that they weren't essential. For instance, some children were enrolled in swimming classes, you know, as a sort of a therapy, and that's been discontinued. It's no longer paid, you know, by the state-funded program. And in some other areas, it's been a music program. They kind of narrowed it down to it has to be a medically necessary service or program that your child needs, not a recreational one. But, you know, and there's a way to appeal that also, because if that program that in their terminology is not a medically necessary program, if that swimming class is what was allowing this child to be more socially interactive, you know, then that is necessary for this child. And so there's a way to appeal. And while we are not advocates for parents, we train the parent to be the best advocate for their own child. So if you're not able to get the service through your regional center, appeal, and maybe you can get it from the school district, or maybe there's another way to get this funded. So we have seen reduction in services, and I think we probably will continue to see that with the way California our budget is right now and our financial situation here is, but we just continue to look for information and ways to work around that problem. And I think you've seen that too, you know, with Opening Doors.
Mm-hmm.
It's the collaborative that we also belong to.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that we only have 15 minutes left. These hours go by so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you, and Alex, I'll let you go first. Why don't you give people your, you know, web address, how they can get a hold of you if, you know, they want to learn more about Hope for Remy or they need, you know, support of some kind?
Well, they can always go to our Facebook page. That is facebook.com/HopeForRemy. And we also have our website, which is www.hopeforremy.org. And they can contact me through both websites. And I would be able to get them in contact with certain support systems that through my social networking that I built up. And if they have any questions about Jet or want to know more about Remy, they could get all that information and lots of photos as well.
And do you have any events coming up that you'd like to talk about?
We do have our third annual Hope for Remy Chili Cook-Off coming up in September. We don't have the date hammered down yet, but we will have that up on both of our websites. As soon as we have that, we should have that up possibly in the next 30 to 45 days.
Okay. Ooh, chili. I love chili.
And then aside from that, we'll be also starting to raise money for the Red Balloon Run for Children's Hospital. It's a 5K and bike run that they do out here in Dallas, Texas. And I'll have that up on the website by the end of the week.
Okay, great. Now, if people are not in Texas, but they want to still support, is there a way for them to do that?
Yes, there's a way for them to support our team. Right now, our team is looking to raise $1,000. And last year, we raised $900. So we're hoping to hit that 1,000 mark because we didn't hit it last year. So hopefully we'll surpass it.
You were close. You were close.
We were very close.
Anna, do you want to give your contact information website
mm-hmm.
as well as talk about any events that you have coming up?
Absolutely. We have an 800 number. So parents can dial in to 1-800-200-4323 or reach us by through our website, which is www.fuerzainc.org. Our calendar of events is on our website. We have monthly events. Our next event in August is going to be in the area of navigating the IEP process and transition for parents. And we have our annual fundraiser benefit dinner coming up in November. And that one we bring it online so that parents can purchase their tickets online and they can also donate online. Because we are 100% volunteer operate organization, we do not receive any state or federal funding. So we rely solely on donations and an small annual membership fee that is waived for parents who cannot afford it. So, you know, we could really use all the support that we can get from our friends and professionals to keep our program running. We just can't stress enough the importance of support groups for parents who have a child, who are caring for a child with special needs.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's just, if we can continue to do what we do, I mean, it's just a blessing. And we're not costing the government anything. You know, I think it would be a wise investment, you know, to help organizations like Hope for Remy also keep that going, because parents are comfortable, you know, and that you are talking to another parent that is dealing with the same anxieties, have the same concerns, and it's so much better than just, you know, reading the information or talking to a stranger over the phone, that you're able to connect with somebody who can relate. And so both of our organizations, I'm glad that I was introduced to Alex and his and hopefully Remy, and, you know, I hope that people listening will support both of our organizations. Our missions are similar to help families get through and any challenging times that they're going through with the diagnosis of their children. But, you know, ultimately our goal is just to be able to contribute to family and also to help these children reach their full potential. And, you know, they're all unique. They have unique qualities, and we just want to be able to see them grow and
mm-hmm.
blossom
mm-hmm.
And to see them as members of society along with everybody else.
Right. And, you know, if you both get a chance, last week we had on the show Edwin Henderson, and he's the founder and president of On a Mission, which is Los Angeles-based. But, you know, he doesn't receive any kind of government funding or contracts. Hope for Remy, Alex, you don't. Are you receiving any government assistance and funding?
No, we are not.
Okay. If you get a chance, connect with Edwin. He's very open. He's on Twitter or he's on Facebook. You can both find him on my Facebook page. But their website is joinoam.org. And all of his programs are corporate sponsored or corporate funded. And he's very open to just chatting with other nonprofits about and share kind of like what he's done and, you know, how he's done it. Because I agree with Anna, you know, both the missions of Hope for Remy and Farz are so important and so needed for parents and families and individuals with you know, disabilities or special needs, that, you know, if we can get the word out there and get, you know, corporations involved to support what you're doing, you know, you can just reach that many more people. So
mm-hmm.
If you get a chance, look him up.
Okay.
Let him know that, you know, you heard about him through, you know, Heart for the Community, and he'll be open to chatting with you both. So I want to thank you both, Alex and Anna, for being on the show today. Especially you, Alex. I know that, you know, you're just coming back from vacation, so I'm sure there's a lot of things going on in your world.
there's always a lot going on in my world, but I appreciate the time, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise. I'm so glad that I actually get to talk to you instead of just, you know, through Facebook or something.
And Anna, it was a pleasure talking to you as well. If you have a Facebook or a Twitter, I'll definitely want to connect with you so we can continue talking offline.
Thank you, Edwin. Likewise. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think if the both of your agencies could partner on something, that would be amazing.
It will be. Yes, it will be. Thank you.
Yes.
So, again, thank you both for being on the show, and thank you to our listeners who, you know, I am so humbled by, you know, our numbers. I can't even begin to express how grateful I am. Our numbers are skyrocketing, and who knew?
Great. No, that's great. That's wonderful.
It's great to see it skyrocket from the first day you started to today. It's really, really happy for you, Doreen.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad that people find what we're doing interesting. And you know, we have some really interesting shows coming up as well. And next week we're actually going to be talking to two really great women about how they've used the skills that they learned through pageantry in their everyday jobs and how it gave them self-confidence and leadership skills and, you know, all of these wonderful things that are transferable that until I read this article, I think it was CNN that wrote it, I didn't realize those transferable skills were there. And then the following week, we're on this whole, like, fashion glamorite kick, I guess. The following week, I'm very excited. We have two writers from Huffington Post who are going to be on the show. They have a website called How to Be a Redhead. So this show is going to be the business of glamour. It should be really fun.
It should be. That is great. That's great, Doreen.
Thank you. So, again, thank you both for being on the show. And for all of our listeners, thank you for your continued support. And remember that together we can change the world one heart at a time. Have a great week, everyone.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You'll leave.